John Harry Sharan, you are a master at knowledge of the world beyond and so many other things. So thank you for continuing to share with us your wealth of knowledge. I'm wondering, though, if you can share with us some tangible examples of what you're talking about. In other words, we're talking about entities beyond and people who have crossed over and gone beyond, and we're talking about communication and so forth. And a lot of people might be listening and saying to themselves, well, that's interesting, but it sounds theoretical. Some people might maybe scientists like yourself, and they may want to have something they can actually hold in their hand. So let's share with those people something that they can hold in their hands. Give us something tangible, some tangible examples of what you're talking about.
Okay, that's a fair enough question. And again, the answers are I have aren't answers like I heard so and so said this to so and so, and this is what I think, I believe, and trust that guy or that girl or that woman or that whoever. And so I am conveying this to you. I'm telling you about things that have happened to me. Little symbols. Now, this one isn't like something magical, but it did happen. My wife died in July, August, that's July 11th, way back when. And her birthday was August the 14th, and it was the first birthday we were having without her. And my two children, Malika and Jonathan, were sitting at the table, and I looked around and I said, if your mommy had been here, I think it would have been such a great time because she always was so excited about our birthdays and hers. And all of a sudden, we heard she played the piano. She was so good at the piano. We heard the piano play, let's say, about six or seven notes. And I thought, oh, out of my grieving, sick mind, I am imagining things. And my daughter, who was 11 years old, looked at me and said, Daddy, did you hear that? And I thought, oh, I'm not the only one. I'm not imagining this. Malika heard it. And then Jonathan, he didn't even look up from his dinner. He just said, oh, that's just mommy telling us that she understands and she is enjoying her birthday with us. Now, to this day, I talk about that. In fact, people have written about it in books, this experience. And it was witnessed by two people sitting with me. Jonathan was 7, Malika was 11. She heard it, and he probably heard it too because he said, oh, that was just mommy. Well, let's go to a very practical example that helps us. Physically helps us. My daughter grew up and she got her first car. In those days, we got the cheapest car we could, which needed repairs every day because she was finishing off her high school or maybe in her second to last year, whatever it is. I don't recall. It was a long time ago, but this is what I remember. I remember that we took the car in to have it checked out because something wasn't working too well, and they said it will cost $800 to fix it. And I thought, oh my goodness, how are we ever going to do this? I don't have that $800 in those days. I couldn't even, I mean, it could as well have been $80,000. Well, I thought about it and thought about it, and I said, one way or the other, we'll get it done. I know you got to get your car because we got to do this, do that, and so forth. And it was time for me to visit, to go on a trip where I was going to be away for the weekend. And, this time the kids could stay by themselves. They'd grown up a bit. And so I was away, and they know that I would call them. They knew that I would be in touch, and they knew, unless it was very important, that I'd be in meetings and stuff like that. One day, this day when I was away, I'm in the middle of a meeting. And again, it was, as vice president of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Center, I'm sitting there at the board meeting. Elizabeth is sitting with me. A bunch of people from all over the country are there. And the phone rings. No cell phones in those days, mind you. The phone rings, and it's Malika. Somebody said, John, your daughter wants to talk with you. And that always scares me because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I hope everything is okay. There's no big problem. They aren't going to call me if everything is okay. So I rushed to ask for an excuse, went to the phone again, just landlines. I went to the phone in the other room and picked it up. And my daughter was on it and said, Daddy, Daddy, I won. I said, you what? She said, I won. I said, won what? She said, the contest. Now, my daughter never got into anything with contests. I had no idea what she was talking about, and she was so excited she couldn't explain it. I said, can you start again from the beginning? You won what? What contest, and what did you win? She says, I won $1,000. I said, $1,000? How did you do that? She said, well, this is what happened. I came home from school. I'm thinking about the car, and how is poor daddy going to get the money to fix this car? And I'm sitting down, and I turn on the radio. Notice the commonality with radios here. First, you turn this radio on, you play this tape, you do that. I think that's one of the most ignored ways of getting communications or being in touch. And so she says, I turn on the radio, Daddy, and there was the song playing. And after the song, it said, okay, call in, and if you are the 93rd or 94th, whichever one caller it is, you will win something. So she says, you know, I never, ever, ever do that. But I called and the number was busy, so I hung up. And a few moments later, I tried again. And the voice who answered said, yippee, you've won. And I asked him, Daddy, what did I win? And he said, $1,000. I said, why did you call? You never, ever do that. She said, it was like Mommy was telling me to do that. Now, here we go, Steve. Practical thing. Couldn't fix the car. We needed $800. My daughter goes ahead, has this feeling. Now, whether it's correct or not, I don't know. But I trust my daughter, and I believe what she says. And she says, I never do this. And I wasn't going to do it, but it was like Mommy was telling me to do it. So I picked up the phone, and when it was busy, I didn't want to call again, but it was like she was saying, try one more time. And I did, and I won $1,000. This is well documented. They even took taxes out of it before they gave her the balance. They sent her a check, which was just enough to pay for her car and had enough left over to buy a little camera. And this was written about also by Susan Apollon, the lady who wrote the book called Touched by the Extraordinary. People should check that out. Fantastic book. A book. It has, she's done 2 volumes, and it tells stories and stories about these different things that she has documented. So there's a useful way, Steve. I mean, you got $1,000 because a voice from somewhere else tells you, or you get the feeling that you're being told by your mother to dial this call, and when you do, what are the chances of that?
That is a very good point. And, you know, as you talk about that, I'm reminded of a tangible experience of my own. I had a run-in not too long ago with a person who, for whatever reason, didn't like me. And actually, I know the reason. It was because I had exposed something that he had done to someone else. And we're in the same town. But I was out with some friends one night, and we were about to go into this restaurant. And I've never had this experience before. And what happened was, I heard my mother's voice. Remember, my mom died when I was 6. I actually heard her voice saying, Steve, don't go in there. And I had never had that happen before. And I was, you know, this was recently, and I'm over 40 years old, and hasn't happened since she died when I was 6. So a long time had passed, and no voice, and suddenly hears her voice. I'm thinking, I'm imagining this. Sure enough, I got in there. And there was that person whom I had exposed for what he was to someone else, and kind of warned them about his character, just doing what I thought would be a friendly deed. Mm-hmm. And he saw me, and he actually physically struck me. He actually slapped me for having exposed him for what he was. Wow. So and he actually, it could have gotten a lot worse. It could have gotten a lot more violent. But I think that because of the how extreme the situation could have been, my mother was actually stepping in to save me from what could have been some physical harm. As it was, there was just a slap, and I was wise enough to walk away knowing what his character was. But I believe that in cases where we have some potential extreme harm, there could be some interaction. Do you have any other stories like that, anything that you've heard of or experienced yourself like that, where there's not just a sign from the radio, but actually some kind of voice that actually steps in and...
Oh, yeah. There are many, many, many. This topic could take days for us to talk about all the intricacies of it. This is the kind of thing that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and I used to sit and talk about until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning whenever we'd get together over weekends. And so, yes, this is valid. In fact, I would venture to say that it wasn't only the voice that you heard, but it was like your mother intervened. They do have, I think, I've come up with a whole bunch of theories, some of which I've tested, but I feel that they do have the ability to interfere sometimes. Not always. Sometimes they can't do anything about it because of the prime directive, the free will thing. But other times, and I don't know which time is which, but that seemed to be a time when she did that. She physically intervened, and that could be through ways you may not even know. For example, there was like an energy force that prevented this guy from doing more harm. Or it could have been that he got a little confused and wondered what he was doing, and the situation ended. Oh, yes, lots of those. Many times happened to me where I swore I heard a voice about something, you know, don't touch that. And if you had touched it, it was a short circuit. It could have caused a big problem. Or driving, I think at the beginning I mentioned the time when I was driving from New York, coming back to Georgia, and it was late in the morning, and I heard the voice yell, John! And I woke up just in time to avoid a giant truck that was coming at me. And we can hear it. And I think we are watched over, Steve. I think those who love us did not love us and leave us. I think they were sad to leave us. But I also think that the bonds exist, and in as much they could help, especially mothers and their children, in as much as they can help, they would help. They've got other stuff to do. I don't think for one moment that they're sitting around there somewhere in the branch of a tree saying, I'm going to spend the next 24 hours and the next 2 months or 2 years or 20 years watching over John. I think they have work to do. In fact, I'd be bored to death to, you know, pardon the pun, to if I had to do that. I think they come to you in moments of great danger or when they have something meaningful to say or they need to counsel you or to just touch base, so to say. I don't think, I wouldn't want to be watched 24 hours a day. There are times I don't want to be watched at all. So I think it's a very well put out plan by the Creator. Whoever the Creator is, and I don't think anybody knows, each religion talks about him, her, it, but whoever it is, he certainly made a fantastic world with fantastic things and given us every opportunity communicating back and forth. We're sad because we lost our mom, which happened to me, or my wife, which happened to me, or my dad, or my grandparents, or my sister. Yeah, but there's a part of me that seems to know with a knowing that goes beyond every reason that anyone could give me that it's not the end. It's not the end. Because, again, as a scientist, I look at it, every particle, every life form has a function. And if this was the end of a human being who had spent X number of years learning all these things, doing all these things, and suddenly there's annihilation, I mean, I would turn around and say to God, dear God, this doesn't make sense. I could have made a better world than that. And I don't believe that, for one little thing that I may have done wrong, that I would be condemned to forever and never again see my loved ones. That would be really be, even here in our man-made laws, we have laws against cruel and unjust punishment. And that would certainly be the case. So I think it's a lot bigger, a lot more loving, and a lot less complex than we think. Just let us think every once in a while about those we love who are not physically here anymore. Just like when I was in the United States of America and my parents lived at the eastern coast, northern coast of South America, and I couldn't see them, but I knew they were there. I knew they were there. I could feel their energies. I could send them letters. Let's do that in our minds. I think we speak to them in our minds and hearts.
Very well put, John. I appreciate the enlightening information on that. Now, we've been talking about getting messages directly, and we've been talking about getting messages from the radio and so forth. One of the things that I like to do every now and then, it doesn't always work for me, but one of the things I like to do is when I have a question about something, whether I should do it or not, or I'm not sure about something, I open a book, just any book, and I open it randomly to a page, just completely randomly, and I read. And sometimes it's just kind of gibberish. Sometimes it doesn't really give me anything that I need. Other times it's right on the money and it tells me exactly what I need to hear or offers some direction. And I've heard about this technique being used to communicate with people who have passed on as well. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Oh, yeah. It's a common thing used by some people, some very interesting people. By the way, Richard Bach said that many, many years ago. He says, when you have a problem, pick up a book, any book, open it and read that page, and there will be something pertaining to what you're thinking about. Pick up a book, any book, and you will find something pertaining to what the question was, or a message. Or it's another way to communicate. You read there and there'll be something as if your mother is talking to you, or your father or grandfather. So it's just one of those other ways. It could happen watching a TV show and there's a sentence that somebody says, and you say to yourself, oh my goodness, that sounds, if my mom was here, she would have said exactly that to me at this time. And my question is, does it matter really how the message comes through, whether somebody texts it as a text message, or it comes through as a cell phone or a landline or an email or a voice across the street? It really doesn't, because what the communication does, it conveys meaning. And that's all we need. And we can get that in dreams. We can get that through the radio, through signs and symbols. I know some people who use the pendulum. Again, a lot of people, because if used properly, you will get yes and no answer. And you'd be amazed how often they do turn out, beyond statistics, turn out to be correct. Somewhere in there, Steve, is the answer to what you asked me.
Okay, I respect that. I appreciate that. And you know, when I said sometimes I turn to a page and it looks like gibberish, it could be that I'm not reading the full page, or that I'm just not open to the answer that the book is giving me at that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That, of course, it's always, remember, this is a communication, okay, where I think we have to have different levels of energy and beingness meet. Just as we want to and are trying to communicate with those who have gone on, they too want to. But sometimes we can block that by, let's say you open that book and you're looking at it and it makes no sense to you. It could be that at that moment you really want to see what's there, but your mind is occupied by other things. You are too intensely focused, and you probably should have been in a non-focused way where you're open to reading the messages and actually reading the meanings on the page. So it's a matter of practice like anything else. And the times when it doesn't seem to make sense, close the book, put it away, do it again another day.
That makes sense, and I will keep that in mind. Now, John, what about the Mrs. Hopes of the world? And when I say Mrs. Hopes of the world, I mean people who are set up in business, and they're usually called Mrs. Hope. They're on the side of the road, and they have a business set up. It's usually a nice building, looks kind of like a house. You can go in there, and you can get your fortune read. And I've been to them. I've been to them in Los Angeles, and I've been to them in other places. And they're not always called Mrs. Hope, but usually they have a name that's recognizable, and it's understood that that's the place where you can go get your tarot cards read, you can get your fortune read, they will tell you your future or answer any questions for you. What do you think about these people?
I laugh because it's one of my hobbies, and every continent I've been to, and I've visited all of them a number of times, except, of course, Antarctica, and I'm in no rush to get there. But every place, and you call them Mrs. Hope, and I call them Sister Destiny, and they have all kinds of names. And some of them are really, truly good. Some of them are real. But what has happened is they use, many of them use their talents just to, you know, put $5 in my hand and I'll tell you what's going to happen. You know, they use it to make a living in sort of not honest ways. And they make up things and tell you things. But every once in a while you meet one who is so fantastic. For example, one I met up north many, many years ago. You know what she charged? She was 93 or 92 years old and charged $3 for what she called a reading. She didn't need to know your name, where you're from, or anything. But when you walked in there, she started right away, and she was so good. And the word was out. She didn't have to set up signs. People came to her because of, she was very good. And then there are others, like we have here too, and even in Georgia, down the road a few miles away. It's one of these sister somebody says, come in and get your palm read. And instead of totally throwing out all that sort of stuff, we say to ourselves, you know, if somebody could really do that, he or she would be very useful to me. And the answer is yes, there are people who could do that. I don't know if I mentioned earlier, once I had asked Richard Bach about astrology, I said, Richard, how can a guy like you believe in such a thing? And he said, I never used to until I met somebody who was very, very, very good at it, just like in palm reading. I just laughed at it, and I thought, you know, the lines and the palm, okay, humor me. And one day, in a far-off country, I met somebody who had never, ever heard of me. In fact, it was way in a village in India. And when he looked at my palm and started telling me things, I was shocked. I never used to take palm reading seriously until I met someone who was very, very, very good at it. Since then, I've met many. So what I'm saying is, look, there are all kinds of tools out there for communications with the other world or other worlds. And we can go maybe another time, another day, into communications with extraterrestrial lives, life forms. And I know people, very well-known and respected people, who do that or have done that. And but there are methods and things out there, and I think sometimes we should be very careful that we are not, you know, we wouldn't want to give a razor to a child, because the child would, not that the razor is a bad thing, it's used for good purposes, and not that children are bad, they're wonderful little human angels, but you put the two of them together and they could be a tragedy. So what I'm saying, just a word of warning, you know, use common sense like anything else in exploring this field, but trust yourself, protect yourself, and be very grateful that we all have the opportunity and the abilities to do this, some more than others. Not because I can't play the piano, I can't play Mozart on the piano, means that I can't just tap out a little tune with my finger, one finger or two, but I couldn't play like a concert pianist, and we all don't need to be concert pianists. I have gotten to the point where I can get whatever information I need, do what I need with what I have, and I still always study it because I find it interesting and also useful.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me. Let's change gears a little bit now. And you talked about something earlier that I actually want to go back to. And that's the idea of privacy. There's something that you said that made me start thinking about this, about the spirit world and people, entities rather, being in tune with us and watching over us. That's what we were talking about, watching over us. We talked about the concept of my mom watching over me and other people watching over other loved ones. Now, what about privacy? If we have a spirit world in which people can watch over us, for example, my mother knew that I was going into a dangerous situation. She warned me. You were warned about a situation where you could have very well ended this physical life because of something you were doing in the car. You needed to suddenly be aware of it. So they're watching over us. And the question becomes, do we have any privacy?
I have always, at first, it's a question that would bother us because, like I said, don't want to be watched over 24 hours a day. There are times I really, really need my privacy. And I would be very uncomfortable if I thought there wasn't any. But I think here's an example of how it works, Steve. When my kids were living with me, we all had separate rooms. And they had their privacy in their rooms. They could have their friends. They can watch their TV or do whatever it is. They could have their TV or do whatever it is. And I wouldn't bother them. But in a way, I was watchful because if I heard a horrible scream or if I had a father's intuition that something was wrong, because we normally know that, I would go into that room and try to help them. Or if they called for help, I'd go there. And many times, our subconscious calls for help. It sends out signals. It's like, you know, the fight and flight syndrome where the adrenaline pumps and it conveys the feeling or the thought even before you know it. Or take, for example, animals can pick out things. If you're scared of a certain dog, it knows even before it sees you and it starts barking. And I'm sure you know of some situations like that. So these loved ones who have gone on, they aren't sitting there watching us all the time, but they're aware of the signals. And if for one moment there's a danger signal, because remember, past, present, and future to them, these are a little different from what it is to us. We might be doing a linear thing, and they might have a little bit more leeway in picking up the things that are coming towards us. When that happens, it's like, huh, my little boy is in danger, and instantly your mom is there saying, let's see what it is, and then, if permitted, would do whatever she could to prevent it. So I think we don't have to worry about the privacy aspect of it, because I don't think they sit around. They want us to have our own lives. They want it to be free. They want it to be useful. But I think in moments of great stress, they do know, and they do want to comfort us or help us. And that's how I really feel about it. And there are certain times, I think, that were very special to them and you. For example, Sundays were very special to my wife and I, especially in the afternoons, because we take the two kids out and go get some ice cream or do something. And so on Sundays, if I sit quietly around that time, I could almost feel the presence of my wife. And does it mean she was watching me all that Sunday afternoon? No, it meant I initiated it. I remembered. I sent out a signal, and there she was responding to it, and there might be a smile on my face, and sometimes it's a smile of joy, and other times it's a smile of sadness, and then it gets back to joy, because I remember that life is forever. You cannot destroy it. And so, you see, this is not really magic or mystery. It's just another way. Just really another way for us to be in touch with ourselves and in touch with those who love us and those we love. All we've got to do is practice a little, be aware, listen to the voices within, look at the signs around us, and we will get guidance beyond our fondest dreams. We will get help that seems miraculous. That's what I think about this whole thing. And I'm sorry we don't have much time to talk about anything else, but it was a pleasure. It really was a pleasure going through this segment of it tonight, Steve.
Well, John, it's always a pleasure learning from you, and I'm always inspired and motivated to delve back into these things that I've had an interest in over time. So thank you for enlightening us about whispers from the universe, those communications that are from those who have crossed over and from entities, both helpful and otherwise, because sometimes we do need to be aware that there are precautions that need to be taken, and you've enlightened us about those as well. So, John, as always, a very well-rounded discussion, and I appreciate that.
It was a pleasure, Steve. We'll do more of this later.
I will look forward to it. And on behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and my good friend here, John Harry Charan, we wish you an outstanding life.